With this key, you unlock the door to imagination. Beyond it is another dimension, a dimension of sound. You are guided through a world beyond imagination, one controlling of sassy people, outlandish theories, and much gabbing. Guiding you through this wondrous journey are your host, Nicole and Rolando. That's the signpost up ahead. Your next stop, remakes, reboots, and revivals. And that's my Twilight Zone. I'm going to put the music under it. It's going to be cute. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I swear it's going to work.
It's a little bit on the nose. I feel like everyone who does sort of a Twilight Zone is going to do that.
We did the same thing for Arrested Development.
Yeah. I feel like less people talk about Arrested Development on podcast, probably.
Maybe.
I'm Rolando.
And I'm Nicole.
And this is Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals.
An original podcast.
About unoriginality.
Okay. Good morning, guys. How are you this lovely morning?
Hello, hello.
Or this foggy morning.
Uh-huh. Yes, today we will be talking about this important show, right? About, it's an anthology series, right?
You can say. We are, yeah, for sure.
Canceled after 3 seasons and then picked up again. And then it's all in our hearts. It's something that we talk about, all of us. That's right, we're talking about Black Mirror. One of the greatest sci-fi shows of all time. But Black Mirror could not exist, obviously, without the real topic of the day, Twilight Zone.
Yes.
So yes. Respect paid where earned. Is that a saying?
It is now. Respect paid where it is earned. We're also joined by Eddie. How are you this morning?
I'm quite well. Thank you.
And we're not joined by Josh.
No, yeah, no Josh today.
Yeah.
Paternity leave and now slacking off.
Seriously. Model we might employee. Not invite him back. So
we might.
We're just gonna banish him to the cornfield. All right, so we're talking about the Twilight Zone. And I'm super excited because this is probably my favorite TV show in regards to, I think it's the best TV show. Are you excited?
I guess.
Yeah.
It's so funny. I'm not a big Twilight Zone fanboy.
Okay.
I've only seen like episodes casually.
Mm-hmm.
However, this list that you and Eddie made me see were like spectacular episodes. So,
and you're a big fan, Eddie.
Oh, I'm definitely a big fan.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, this was kind of like how I fell in love with like sci-fi and mystery and that level.
Fantasy.
Oh,
yeah.
That level of suspense and drama, you know, mm-hmm. building up to the moment of reveal of secret, you know, the secret hidden. So.
Yeah, that's why this show works so well, because so many shows came out after that like stick to one genre. But like in a way, the Twilight Zone is kind of genreless in terms of just like fantasy. It, yes. To me, I think it's just fantasy, but that within itself is super broad. I've been watching this show since they were showing it on the Sci-Fi Channel in the 90s. I love mm-hmm. this show. It traumatized me with one particular episode that I'll get into when I do my history portion. But I really love it, and I'm really excited to talk about it and to tell you guys a little bit about its history. Mm-hmm. So let's go back to the 50s.
You unlock this door with the key of imagination. Beyond it is another dimension, a dimension of sound, a dimension of sight, a dimension of mind. You're moving into a land of both shadow and substance, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the Twilight Zone.
Do you guys know about the golden age of television?
Yes, I think.
Okay, well, I will tell you guys again.
Wait, the 50s was the golden age?
Yes.
I thought the golden age was like 60s, but like...
No. No, no, no. So, television
was... Leave the Beaver era?
Yes.
Isn't that 60s?
That was 50s into 60s.
Okay.
I Love Lucy is 50s, Honeymooners is 50s in terms of sitcom.
Okay.
But there's, you know, television was very still new in the 50s. And not everyone in America owned one. It was by the late 50s and the 60s that pretty much people, especially in rural America, started owning televisions. And it was a completely different time. They would do a lot of live teleplays and a lot of live shows. They had shows like Playhouse 90, where they would perform plays live. Mm-hmm. on television. And this is where a lot of young actors got their start. Captain Kirk, what's his damn name? William Shatner. Warren Beatty, and a lot of writers, a lot of directors, they got their start doing these live teleplays.
Mm-hmm.
But also like back in the 50s, they would do like live plays of Shakespeare plays. Mm. They would show the ballet and stuff. Like, there was more. They had this idea of making television a kind of a cultural buildup because they were really worried about the state of where this country was going. And they wanted to build up people again. So they actually did like, it made it really high culture and highbrow television. Yeah. You're looking at me like you're shocked.
Yeah, that dream died.
That is so now what television is, because after a while they started incorporating different types of things to try and reach rural America. Mm-hmm. And what they did was they did like rural sitcoms and then like Westerns. Mm-hmm. And those became so popular that these live teleplays and all these cultural shows just completely died out. Mm-hmm. And then everything we kind of know now in television became what it is. So Rod Serling was one of the people who made a lot of these live teleplays, and he was highly successful in the 50s. He did this teleplay called Requiem for a Heavyweight that was absolutely fantastic.
Right, about a boxer.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Turned into a wrestler, and they made into a film in 1962. Really great.
And it inspired The Wrestler.
Well, no, because The Wrestler was always a wrestler. It wasn't a boxer who thought that wrestling was beneath him.
I'm just throwing that out there like it's a fact. I don't know if it's a fact.
And then, so Rod Serling was super interested in making more commentaries in his plays. And he wrote one called Noon on Doomsday. And this was about his reaction to how Mississippi and the government handled the murder of Emmett Till. And he was in that area when it happened. But when it debuted, the censorships were like, let's water this down. Let's water it down. We don't want to ruffle anyone's feathers or anything. So they watered it down so much that it like completely lost what his intention was. And he was upset about that, even though it was still a success. And he realized that the only way that he could make stories that had commentaries and controversial ideas was actually more with robots or aliens or supernatural occurrences, because people then would be more open to it. Mm-hmm. So this is how he formed his idea and his template for The Twilight Zone. So The Twilight Zone debuted in 1959, mm-hmm. and it ran for 5 seasons. And the big tier writers were Rod Serling himself. He wrote like over the course of those 5 seasons, I think almost 100 of the episodes, by the 5th season, there was a little bit, I think there was like 150 episodes.
Okay, so he wrote most of
them. So he wrote a lot, or maybe around 92, I think the actual number is. And by the 5th season, he was like, I was done. Mm-hmm. I was spent. And then 2 other writers, Charles Beaumont and Richard Matheson. You guys might know Richard Matheson from being the writer of I Am Legend, What Dreams May Come. Really famous stories that have been turned into successful movies and stuff, and a great science fiction fantasy writer. So these 3 men really defined the feel of The Twilight Zone. And I'm sure if you named like some of your favorite episodes, it was written by one of them. So the thing about The Twilight Zone is that they're episodic. So no recurring characters, nothing. Every episode is a new story. And yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, some of the stories that they have debuted in The Twilight Zone have, I feel like, become templates for stories that have been told over and over and over again.
Yes.
And it's just like really become a prominent thing in our pop culture, even the idea. Because also within the show, you have Rod Serling cut to him and he's like there in the world and he's smoking a cigarette and he's just like telling you how it went. And the idea of like this man there, like smoking cigarettes, speaking so straightly about how you're about to enter the Twilight Zone. Like it's all just like people are super familiar with the Twilight Zone without really watching much about it. I feel like it's just really embedded in pop culture.
It's really seeped into pop culture.
Yeah, it has. Sure. So what are some of the episodes that you watched?
Oh, I don't remember the titles and stuff.
Describe the plots. I'll say the titles.
There's the episode where it's a killer doll.
Okay, the doll.
And the abusive father.
Mm-hmm.
There was the episode where the old lady is avoiding death.
With Robert Redford? A young, striping Robert Redford?
Was that Robert Redford?
Is that the one, Eddie? I think is it Nothing in the Dark, and then like he guides her to death and it's like it's okay.
Yeah. That episode. Yeah. What else?
Eye of the Beholder.
Eye of the Beholder, yes.
Classic.
And To Serve Man.
To Serve Man, right.
Yeah.
There was also the one where I think she's a 12 or something. It's like a young girl who is about to go through a body transformation to become like a beautiful person.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
I forgot what it's called. I think it was like she's a 12. Something like that.
Yeah, I forgot that title.
The Parallels, the season 4 when they were trying out 1-hour episodes.
Yeah.
The episode
where...
They were forced to. The Toy Story episode.
Wait, which one?
The one where they're in a donation bin.
Oh, okay. So you didn't see the one where that like hungover couple is like on a train that goes like in a loop and they're like, why are we stuck in this town? And it turns out they're in a child's playset.
Oh, no, I never saw that one. That sounds good.
Yeah.
Now, that's the one where they're, but the, you find out that the big people are aliens and that they are from Earth and they were taken from Earth and given as a gift to the child.
Is that what the story, I don't remember. I just thought that it turned out they were in a child's playpen. I didn't know that, like,
the one with the trains that they don't know why they can't get out. That they realize, you know, oh, honey, we just brought you these toys, like, from.
Oh my gosh! It's been years since I've seen that.
Yeah,
one.
I think that's the way that I think that's it. The one that one of the things that freaked me out.
Was yeah, like, oh my twist God. On a twist. I swear.
The monsters are on Maple Street. I saw that one.
Yeah, that's probably my favorite episode.
That's a good episode. I don't know. I think that's the one where they're all. At Mardi Gras, it's like a Mardi Gras party, and some guy is dying, and they're all taking off masks.
Horrified me as a child.
Yeah, same, for sure.
If you wear a mask long enough, you're going to take the face of that mask. Genuinely terrifying idea.
So it's so funny because I always confuse that episode with the Eye of the Beholder because of all the pig masks at the end.
Yeah.
When I was explaining to Eddie, it was just like, oh, I remember this episode with the pig mask. I was like, oh, yeah, Eye of the Beholder. I was just like, okay. And then we started watching the episode. I'm like, no, this is not the episode.
Actually, I remember being awake at like 2 a.m. and turning on my television, and there was a marathon of The Twilight Zone, and I must have been 11. So this must have also been like 2001.
And probably New Year's Day, because usually probably. That's when marathons would run.
And it was this episode called The Howling Man, where this man...
Yeah, that was on your list. I didn't get a chance to see it.
Yeah.
At a certain point, I was just like, all right.
You were pooped out. Yeah. Zoned out. So this guy, the story is that this man went on a European tour and he got separated from his tour and he ended up at this monastery and he gets taken in by the men of the monastery and he finds this man is being kept prisoner in the basement. And the man's like, these people are just holding me against my will. They're fucking crazy. Please let me out. Please let me out. So he goes upstairs. He's like, dudes, you know, god men, because I don't know what they are. Maybe monks. Monks, why are you holding this guy prisoner? And they're like, that man's the devil himself. Do not let him out.
Was he a werewolf?
So this whole episode, he's just like, they're telling him, like, haven't you seen what's going on in the world? The world has been better and safer since we've locked him up and it's taken us this many years and all this stuff. And the guy's like, I'm just some guy who was out at a picnic with my wife and they took me. So the character is super torn. At the end, of course, he chooses to leave him out and free him. And it turns out, of course, that this man is in fact the devil. And what they did was that as he's walking outside of the jail, he slowly turns into the devil, but it's 1960. So how do they do that? Every time he passes a pillar, he has more and more of the makeup on. Mm-hmm. But of course, I'm 11 years old. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. And this is like 2001. So CGI wasn't that great. It scared the shit out of me.
2001?
Yeah.
The CGI wasn't, I don't think they had CGI back then.
Well, special effects in general.
Yeah.
Wasn't what it was.
Right.
Scared the shit out of me. And to this day, like when I watch it, it still gives me like a that feeling that I felt as a child.
Interesting.
So it's a show that is still effective because The Twilight Zone's kind of remembered for its horror elements and its fantastical elements and especially its twist endings and stuff. But the big thing that works is its commentaries. And that not and even it's a character study. I don't know if you guys saw Night Call. So it's this episode in season 5 with this old woman keeps getting calls on her phone and it's just a guy who's like, and it's freaking her out.
Masturbating on the other end.
By today's standards, it definitely sounds like that. and if you were to think about a formula or the way it would go, you know, just some guys terrorizing her. But the way that this one ends up is that this woman had a long lost love who died because of her and because of like how selfish she was when she was like 20. And then he died and she never married again because that was her only love.
Wait, how? Okay.
Like they were in a car and she's like, go faster. And they got into a car accident.
What does that have to do with her being selfish?
Well.
She was trying to get like her hair done?
The way that I'm not going to go into the fucking details of the show, but like in her youth, she was wild and rambunctious and incredibly selfish. And like people are like allude to the fact that that's why her lover died. So it turns out that a phone line
she couldn't find
cut.
Love she was only
she
something
or she never found a love like that again. But now she's alone. So a phone line got cut and the tip of it landed on this man's grave and he's communicating to her from the dead. But the way that she initially responded to him was like, leave me alone, And then he's like, I do whatever you say. And then he leaves her alone. And when she finds out that it's him, and she's devastated and she's alone again. And it's just this interesting direction that the episode goes in, because you just think it's going to be she's terrorized by this unknown thing. And what is it? Is it a ghost? Is it a person outside her window? But like, it's a former lover who's trying to communicate to her. Now she has to almost reflect on herself and see who she is and why that happened.
Right.
So it like takes a fantastical occurrence, a supernatural force, to be simply about a woman who spent her life alone, but like never really worked on herself. Like really kind of heartbreaking stories.
Yes.
Please speak to me. It's over. Please say...
You said leave you alone. I always do what you say.
But Brian. Brian, I didn't know it was you. I thought... Brian.
I think one of the episodes, some of the episodes I do resonate, I think, a little more with are some of the more social commentary ones, though.
Yeah.
So, for example, the monsters are on Beale Street.
Maple Street.
Maple Street. I don't know. Beale Street. Beale Street's a new movie. the monsters on Beale Street. Damn it. The monsters on Maple Street. You know, the hysteria with McCarthyism is so prevalent there. But I guess thinking about it, it's just like that hysteria has always been there as a society. You know, the Salem witch trials, nowadays with Muslims. It's just like it's always something new and nothing has changed since the 1950s.
Yeah.
I guess something mentality has changed since the Salem witch trials. So,
you know. Yeah. It's Don's house! The Warrior's house! Let me get right through you! It's Charlie! He's the one! Yeah. Mob mentality is a dangerous thing, and like you got one person shouting, you're gonna have another person shouting. Mm-hmm. And I love the ending of that one, because like in that one it's aliens, like indeed there are aliens, but they're actually right. Just like testing them to see how they would do. And it's like, of course human beings failed the test again, because we're inherently flawed and don't trust each other.
Well, they weren't being tested, they were setting up an invasion. It wasn't a test.
That's true. They were gonna invade them, and they're like, we don't need to do invasions, like, because they'll destroy each other. Right. Yeah, I loved that ending, and that man was just so handsome, and I'm like, oh, is that what aliens look like? Take me on your ship. You guys are beautiful. And what did you think of, did you see Time Enough at Last?
Yes, the one, so Time Enough at Last is the guy who's married to like this abusive woman who for some reason is like anti-reading. It's so, I guess the equivalent today would be like a man who's obsessed with like his phone and constantly checking his emails and all that stuff. In this version, it's a man who's like constantly reading. Like reading on his job, right? He's a bank teller, and like this, the customer is asking for money, and like he shortchanges her because he's so obsessed with David Copperfield, and he gets in trouble for it, obviously. And then his wife hates the fact that he just reads, and he's just so obsessed with like this fantasy world. But she even like berates him for reading poetry.
Yeah.
There's that scene where like, right, she's just like, "What are you doing? What's that?" And he's like, "It's my book of poetry." And she's just like, "Oh, why don't you read me some?" Did he sit on the couch, right? He opens up the book and she scratched out like all the words.
Yeah.
And I was just like, you're a fucking like bitch. Like this is spousal abuse.
Yeah.
Leave the poor man to read. And then he survives a nuclear explosion and
he has this time to read.
He doesn't mourn for his wife, I noticed.
Yeah. He's just happy.
He's so sad at one moment. Like, he's just like, the world is all gone. It's just me by myself. And they're like, oh my God, books. He's so excited with all the books. And now he can read because he has all the time in the world. And then his glasses break.
Yeah.
And now he's fucked.
And now he's
all alone and nothing.
And blind.
And blind. Although, I guess I was also thinking, it's just like, well, you know what? You look for wherever there was an eye doctor and stuff and see if you could like
don't find... think too much about it.
If you're blind.
So because it's more than that. I mean that beautiful scene at the end of it where what tragic scene where glass is broken and he looks up at the heavens and he's like, why? I had all the time.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah,
right. You know, it's just like the sheer unfairness of it. That having all the time now to devote his life to his passion, which is reading, and it's just taken away.
Yeah.
The very best thing of all is there's time now. There's all the time I need and all the time I want. Time, there's time enough at last.
Yeah, he had like he loved his irony.
He did. He very rarely had happy endings, but every time there was a happy ending, it was fitting and it was necessary. And it was
There were happy endings.
I don't think I've seen more happy endings. Yeah. There were some. Did you see it? I mean, I've seen like every episode. Did you show him the one where the guy goes back to his hometown?
That's the one I've been telling you about.
Oh, that's the nostalgia one.
Yeah, the nostalgia
one. Okay, yeah. So this one, I've heard a lot about it because Eddie was like telling me about all Rob Sterling and like his own obsession with nostalgia.
Yeah, Rod and, Serling.
What did I say?
Rob Sterling.
Rod. Like Rod.
Rod. Like a Rod.
Yeah.
Sterling.
What did I say?
Serling. You said Rob Sterling.
I said Sterling?
Yeah.
Like Sterling Archer? No.
It's Rob, okay. Rod Serling.
Rod Serling.
Serling. Okay, not yeah. Sterling. Sterling. Yeah.
Yeah, his obsession with his own obsession with nostalgia. That yes. was actually so. I mean, Rod Sterling himself had. Sterling. Had a. He had like a crazy, not a crazy life, but he was enlisted in World War II. You know what I mean? So, like, he enlisted right after high school. Mm-hmm. And as a result, he was in the war and stuff. And apparently, what I learned was, you know, that his love of irony. It turns out that he was like in one of the battalions where they were all starving and stuff and waiting for food to be delivered. And one of his buddies, like, the food lands on his fucking head.
The crate. So his yeah. One of his buddies gets killed because the crate with the food in it crashes on him.
Wow. How ironic is that? He's and starving and the crate of food kills him.
You know, he's one of the men that ends up burying him too. Oh my gosh. So there was, you know, as you see in his episodes, a lot of other stuff that he's done, you know, he puts war and he writes about war and his relationship with war.
Yeah.
And he, mm-hmm. I think it was, I don't know if it was, I don't think it was a Twilight Zone episode, but there's something he did where he puts war on trial too. So uh-huh. he was very affected by his time serving in the military and that to kind of played a role in, you know, how he's became a writer too, because his daughter says that he used kind of writing as his therapy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
as makes therapy. Sense. Yeah.
And the nostalgia episode though, specifically though, I came to learn is important because Rod Sterling's father, mm-hmm. he died while he was enlisted.
Oh, wow.
He never got a chance to come back to like the funeral. His request was denied. So who has seen that episode? Apparently his father plays a big role in that episode.
The which one?
In the nostalgia episode, the one where he goes back in time and he sees himself. Yeah. Dad plays a role, right? Yeah. Yeah. I wonder why.
Yeah, because he had to work that out. You
called
know?
Daddy issues.
No.
Daddy
issues. There's a lot of episodes that have to deal with time and like going back in time or reliving second chances. There's a lot of those. And that's what's so great is because...
back time. I have to get that in there.
Because like, I feel like that's what this... He's trying to connect with us, to his audience, and like say something about the human condition, you know, and he just chooses to do it in a fantastical way. But at the end of the day, like, who can't relate to wanting to go back in time or to like have a second chance?
That he recreated some of the areas of his town in episodes of The Twilight Zone, like the carousel, some of the department stores that are seen in are recreations of the original stuff in the town he grew up in.
And that was, I think, like one of the first 10 episodes of the first season. So that was one of the first ones he did. I think the first season is incredibly strong. Mm-hmm. I think that was like when it was prominently those three writers, Rod Serling and stuff. And this was like new. So they didn't exhaust themselves. Like some of the episodes in the later seasons, although still really strong, you can tell that they're kind of like exhausting themselves of the formula and whatnot. And what they're pretty limited to do after 5 seasons.
Yeah. 5 seasons of like 30-something episodes a season.
Yeah, a lot
That's
of
like
stuff.
Like a lot. There's so I was like trying to find certain episodes. I'm just like scrolling for, I felt like hours. You know?
Yeah, there was a lot to deal with. I'm going to get a playing up. But sometimes like, because they always began with Rod Serling's narration, he comes on screen and he tells you about what you're about to see, and then it ends with a narration. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they were just so, I can't even like, almost prophetic in its way, because like he was giving this overall kind of epilogue on not only the episode, but on the human condition, because that's mm-hmm. what the show is about. And there have been some that to me like was just, I feel like we're going in this direction and stuff. Like it still hits home in 2019, a show from like 1963.
The tools of conquest do not necessarily come with bombs and explosions and fallout. There are weapons that are simply thoughts, attitudes, prejudices, to be found only in the minds of men. For the record, prejudices can kill, and suspicion can destroy. And a thoughtless, frightened search for a scapegoat has a fallout all of its own. For the children, and the children yet unborn. And the pity of it is that these things cannot be confined to the Twilight Zone.
And it's so interesting because when I watch this and nowadays, I'm just like thinking about, unfortunately, let's get political for a second in the Trump era and just kind of this overwhelming feeling of a divide in our country. Mm-hmm. I feel like we're more so than ever the divided states of embarrassment at this point. Mm-hmm. And when I listen to stuff like that, like it truly, like I feel like the Twilight Zone almost saw that, like, this country, if we can't work on ourselves and our basic harmony between each other, we're going to become just like our truths and ideas are going to kill us.
See, I think it was more about also the fear of the other, though.
Yes,
that's
that too.
Really what it is. And Trump has made, like, us Latinos
the fear of the difference. Other, yeah.
Right? And that's kind of, I think, what I saw.
He's met a lot of people, others.
He has. But I think the Trump administration, we could say the wall is his, like, pride and glory right now. So I would argue that, like, the Latino community for sure is his the others right now. Bush's would be the Muslim community, which, yeah, you know, Trump has kind of continued that. It hasn't gone away. So you're right. I will agree with you.
That's what's so great about this show. You know, like, some of them are just like these really weird, outlandish stuff. Like, some of them straight up are really weird and absurd. Kind of, yes, like Nightmare at 35,000 Street, where it's, yeah, like, oh my God, am I going crazy? Or can I be the only one who sees it? There's a guy on this plane. There's a monster on the plane. But then some of them are like, they really hit close to home.
Yeah.
And they just like are so telling and like almost predicting our future and like sums up the human condition perfectly.
Yeah. I think it's interesting. So we've actually been talking a lot right now about the stories themselves, but I want to actually commend the show. I think so you guys think that the longevity comes from the stories themselves. Yeah. I think that's a big part of it.
I think it's also the approach of taking supernatural, sci-fi, sometimes horror, and just fantastical realms in order to present a story that makes you reflect not only on others, but yourself. And everything that Eddie just said, plus like our relationship with time and with existence even thrown in there. Like, it could get actually kind of existential. And it's just, it does it so well.
Mm-hmm.
Because also I think the 50s were such a unique naivete time. And it's just so interesting to see something from quite a while ago showing me something that I can relate to completely in 2019.
Okay. So you guys are going with like, more like the actual stories that they're telling and stuff. That's what I think gives the show its longevity. I think that's part of it. However, I don't think that's the exclusive part of it. I actually think...
In your opinion?
In my opinion. Of course, it's all my opinion. I don't think stories alone is what can captivate an audience how many years later? 60, 70 years later? 60. No, I actually think it's also the kind of short movies. They're basically short movies, short films that he was making. Camera work is exquisite in these movies and performances.
Yeah.
I'm going to talk about Eye of the Beholder because the camera work on that fucking episode was fucking breathtaking. You're watching it, and even now, 2019, I'm watching it, and even though I knew where the story was going, it never took away from the way he filmed the episode. I don't know who, not him. He wasn't directing, he was just writing. But whoever directed that episode, the way they were able to play with light, shadow, silhouette, to kind of not give away that ending that everyone is in pig masks, or yeah, I guess they're just pig people. Mm-hmm. That works. And that actually, that strong filmmaking technique of all these stories is also, I think, what gives it its longevity, though. I think it's that style of storytelling that is able to resonate with audiences today, because otherwise, why do people still love this show? You really think it's just stories alone?
I mean, I think for me, I always focus on the content, mm-hmm, the technical stuff, of course, like it's really good filmmaking. But I also think that by today's standards, because they pretty much were short teleplays, I wonder if people would have the attention span. Because some of them are straight up plays. There's so much talking. There's so much back and forth and like focusing on developing the story. of course they're well shot. This is the golden age of television. They had legitimate filmmakers coming and like making film on TV. That's what their goal was in the 50s.
It reminds me. So was this show shot on film or was it shot on video?
Film.
It was film. Mm-hmm. Exclusively all of them or... Like, I think because in the 50s, weren't they also using magnetic tapes or something?
Yeah, they were developing a new form that
okay, all right, fine. So it was all film and stuff. But, yeah, yeah, I mean, so someone I was speaking to yesterday about Twilight Zone had just casually mentioned, it's just like, oh, but it's in black and white, though, so it's just everything's easier in black and white. And I'm just like, that's not film. All right, film? Film is not easier, period.
Yeah.
Which is, I think... For me, I think one of the problems I have with some of the reboots that come out afterwards.
That's true. It doesn't have the same like literal look to it that film has.
I feel like with all the advancements we have made with like the camera and stuff, it's surprising that like the technique didn't stay.
Yeah.
It kind of feels cheapened. Mm. You know what I mean? And I'm specifically, I guess, talking about the 80s and the 2000s.
Which we'll go into in a second. Actually, fun fact, and I don't know if you know this, Eddie, but they actually did shoot a couple episodes of the original run on tape, and you can notice the quality difference. Mm. I remember watching them. Mm-hmm. Like, why does this look weird? Specifically, it was the girl in the hospital. I think it was room 21. That one was like, that's a good one to look at and notice the quality difference if you kind of want to compare. Mm. And to test Rolando's theory, if you're going to look at a couple of Twilight Zone episodes, look at Room 21. I'm pretty sure that's the title of it. To see what Rolando's talking about and see how much you might enjoy the film ones compared to the tape ones.
Yeah, because I think it's that texture alone that kind of makes these stories feel like they are short films.
They are. And... Well, you know, Occurrence at Owl Bridge was literally a short film that they saw in France and they bought and debuted it as a Twilight Zone episode. Is that
the
one with the
guy hanging?
Yeah.
Oh, so that one. Okay, so that was actually probably one of the earlier ones also.
No, season 5.
No. Earlier ones that I saw.
Oh, that you saw.
I saw that
oh,
okay. one in school because it was based off of a play. Not a play, I'm sorry. A poem.
Yeah.
I don't remember who wrote the poem, but it was a poem about a hang.
It was
about
to hang. It was a short story, and I forgot
it was a short story? I thought it was a poem about like a guy. Or maybe it was a short story, right?
Yeah.
He kind of envisions, he has like an out-of-body experience of him like, he's about to get hanged.
The rest of his life, yeah.
Not the rest of his life, but like what escaping also specifically. Yeah. And it was a weird metaphysical, I guess, short story, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. The quality of the 80s and the 2001s are definitely different. So let's just segue right into that. Let's jump forward. Actually, from 1965 when it ended to when it debuted exactly 30 years later in 1985 when they revived for the first time The Twilight Zone.
What do you know about the history of this revival? Because I know a little bit of it.
I know a little bit too. I mean, not too much. I know that a movie came out in 1983.
Steven Spielberg
and all these other, you know, Wonder Kids loved The Twilight Zone and they wanted to honor it. And they adapted 4 of the original stories into 4 vignettes for the film. Mm. And it did okay.
Yeah.
But The Twilight Zone was still like on people's minds. So yeah. A couple of producers were like, let's revive it for a TV show. Even though I think they had the idea before the movie.
Yes.
And then the movie beat them to it. And they're like, you know what? We're still gonna do it.
The movie itself was also CBS was involved with the movie.
Yeah, because also when Rod Serling stopped and said I can't do this anymore, he sold the rights to ever like revive it to CBS. So CBS has the right to revive it whenever they want, and they've done it 3 times. So so CBS wanted to revive it again.
Yes,
and so I know for this one they got a lot of really great directors of the era in the horror, because this is also like horror is really becoming a legitimate genre within the country. I mean, this is 80s horror. The first episodes alone are directed by Wes Craven.
Yeah. Some of the Wes Craven, I actually saw a Wes Craven episode.
Yeah, they're very good, in my opinion. And
Shatterday? Did you see that
one? I saw Shatterday. Which is based on a short story by Harlan Ellis. Mm-hmm. Very, I love it though. Because that's another one that's a story about, like, all that it's about is that, like, you getting rid of, like, toxic things within yourself and becoming a better person. But they do it in such a literal way where there's, like, there's going to be 2 of you.
Yeah, I didn't like that
one. And you're going to be... I like the idea of what it's saying.
Yeah.
But of course, I also like
Sorry, Doomsday, Bruce Willis. Did we say that?
Moans Day. And when it was Bruce Willis.
Was
yeah.
Starring Bruce Willis. Bruce Willis was that man.
Well, did you realize? I don't know if you watched this because we're watching this on YouTube, but the original 80s one was an hour long of two episodes.
Yes, this I knew.
Yeah.
And you knew that it was an hour long of two separate episodes. Correct.
So the very next one was also directed by Wes Craven called A Little Peace and Quiet. Did you watch that one?
No, I didn't see that one.
That was about a mom who just like finds this necklace. And then when she says shut up, she can freeze time. And when she says start talking, it happens again. And she just so happens to freeze time right as like Russia's bombing us and can totally annihilate us. So like at the end, she's left pondering, do I unfreeze time and let us all die? Or do I live a life of solitude? So it's like an interesting kind of like quandary and like, you know, what is existence and what it is, does it even mean to be alive?
And what does she choose?
We don't know. It ends.
Oh, okay.
There's this other one I saw. I don't know if you saw this one, Wordplay, where this man slowly realizes that like everyone just starts talking gibberish to him. Mm-hmm. But then he realizes that like actually everyone else is speaking this different language and he's the one who has to relearn the language.
Oh, no, I didn't see that
one.
Did
you see that one? It sounds very, it's like, it's a slow thing. And it's just like really, it's not like this absurd outlandish thing. It's just like one day you realize that you are the odd one out who doesn't speak this language and you just have to kind of like conform.
Interesting. No, I saw this one where this lady was working for like a library.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out this is just a library of everyone's lives. And then as they die, they get sent away.
Oh.
So when she figured it out like immediately, which I was kind of pissed off about, like she figured it out in like the first minute.
She's smart.
Nah, she's a woman. I don't believe it. I'm kidding, guys. I'm kidding.
Oh my god, can you edit that, please?
It's a joke. Jesus. No, keep that in there. I want people to know my humor. What was I? Now, thank you. You messed up my train of thought.
The library.
So, yeah. So she discovers that this is a library full of people's lives and stuff. And then she's an aspiring writer. So what she's doing also when things aren't going her way, mm-hmm. she starts like editing people's books so that way things start going her way. And ooh. As a result, there are consequences. Uses
whiteout.
She uses whiteout and a pen to start writing.
It was awesome.
I love that
changing
works.
People's lives, but then as a result, like everyone's lives are intertwined, so then things are constantly changing. And
oh,
it was actually very similar to, which we'll talk about soon enough, The Comedian.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Okay.
So
I think the show only lasted for three seasons. This revival in the 80s.
That's actually pretty long. Yeah.
That is. And I think that like sometimes they didn't like they just eventually did only one episode of like 1.5 hour. And then sometimes they would do like smaller vignettes. Like I saw one that was only 10 minutes.
Oh, okay.
Called it The Children's Zoo.
Okay. I was supposed to see that one, but that was turned out it was mislabeled. And that was one about the
library. Okay. But yeah, that one was just about a girl with really like abusive parents. And then like she gets an invite to. For her parents to take her to the children's zoo. And what it is that the children goes through and then they get to look at a display of abusive parents who have been put in confinement and have to like learn. And then like the children gets to pick her new set of parents.
Yeah, that's cool.
So she ditches her abusive parents for ones who have learned and who have grown within the confinement of the zoo. Mm. Super interesting.
And also
in like 10 minutes.
The 80s one that didn't have, some of them didn't have narration in the beginning or the end.
Yes. Some of them did not. You're right. And this one decided that they would take an actor who actually was in a couple of Twilight Zone episodes from the original run.
Oh,
I forgot his name, unfortunately. If we want to fact check that, I guess we can. Mm. But he simply does the narration at the beginning. And sometimes he doesn't, like we said. Mm-hmm. And sometimes he does it at the end. And sometimes he doesn't. We never see him. Mm-hmm. And I really like that. So Charles Aidman, you know, he's never on screen. And that's the name of the actor who plays the narrator in this one. And Eddie, who was the composer for the original, for the 80s revival?
The Grateful Dead.
Isn't that crazy? The Grateful Dead.
They were the composer for the theme song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the opening was interesting. They made it, the original Twilight Zone went through, I think every season was different until they finally settled on like the door and then the eye and all the stuff.
The spiral,
yeah. But the 80s one was kind of
kitschy.
Yeah, there was something about it, like it just, that's the one thing that didn't work from the 80s was their opening. And other than like when the theme song starts playing and then you see a flash of Rod Serling, and I'm like, oh hey,
oh did you? I didn't even notice that. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like it's a room, but like first it's a forest and then it turns into space and then it becomes a room and then it's a Twilight Zone. Like I don't know. That's the one thing that didn't work. But overall, I actually thought that like the approach of the revival was I quite liked the 80s
one. The 80s revival.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and part of the reason that the CBS decided to do this, so CBS themselves made this show. Like, it was CBS Studios.
Mm-hmm.
It was just cheaper for them to just have full control. You know, they had the rights to it, so it was just cheaper to make these shows their own. I think, well, before I just give this, maybe let's talk about what's it called. So that was the first revival. It lasted 3 seasons, which is good. It actually, ratings wise, like the original run of the X-Files of the Twilight Zone, ratings wise, they were never spectacular ratings on either of these two initial runs.
No,
it was actually the syndication that would eventually make the Twilight Zone come to get its you know how we know it now.
Yeah,
right. It was syndication. So, and that's probably why there was in 2000, you have another revival.
Yeah.
2002 specifically.
Oh, it was for post some reason 9/11. I thought it was 2001.
No, it was not 2002 post 9/11.
Okay.
This was 1 year well into 9/11 world.
You are traveling to another dimension. A dimension not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are only that of the imagination. You're entering the Twilight Zone.
So now we are in 2002. This one only lasted for 1 season. People were not having it as well as they were having it in the 80s, and it just was canceled.
Right.
And this season, or this revival, I should say, this one season, had a bit of a different approach than the 80s one. It decided to really take more of the format of like having the narrator, seeing the narrator.
Narrator.
Who is Forrest Whitaker. We see him in terrible green screen and posing as doing like the Rod Serling thing. And they have cold openings, theme song, the episode closing by the Forrest Whitaker.
Yeah.
Very much so like taken directly from the original 60s run, whereas the 80s one just kind of like took like telling a story as a Twilight Zone episode. Mm-hmm. And it did a couple of remakes / sequels to original Twilight Zone episodes.
Yes.
So that was something that the 80s one, to my knowledge, did not do. If I am wrong, I didn't watch every single episode of the 80s one. Please tell me.
No, you're right. In my research, the remakes from the original one came from the 2000s version.
Okay. So they remade Eye of the Beholder.
Eye of the Beholder.
Which was almost a shot-by-shot remake.
Somehow they fucked that one up.
Well, they changed a couple of lines of dialogue that I'm like, why did you change it? And like what you changed it to didn't work.
The dialogue for me, I didn't even notice there was changes. I think it was like the camera work that was just so sloppy.
You thought so?
I just didn't feel it. Didn't, again, this is where I was talking about the Eye of the Beholder, like its beautiful camera work,
mm-hmm.
Its use of shadows and stuff. Like, I feel like in 2002 we had the technical capabilities of like trying to do better storytelling, and I think it just kind of fell flat on its face. Also, the voice acting. Like, no shade to Molly Sims, but like whoever was the original voice actress for the original run, I mean, she was able to like deliver such emotion in like her lines, right? Because it was all dubbed.
But don't you also think that like in the 60s, when you hear like an over dramatic, like, you know, like delivery, that you'll buy it more than you would in like a 21st century production? Like, it also has to do with like the time period.
No, I don't think so.
I think
it had to do with the performance.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know who would have been better cast.
Because I thought that the girl was perfectly fine.
Molly Sims?
Yeah. No. I thought she did a perfectly okay job. I didn't think there was anything wrong with her performance.
Her voiceover work was a little too like, meh.
Huh.
It felt like,
The one line of dialogue, though, I did notice was at the end when she meets the guy who's going to take her to a gated community or whatever, who, by the way, in the original, they couldn't have gotten a more attractive person.
No, right? Yeah.
To be that guy. I was just like, God damn. But in the second one, she looks at him and she goes, Mr. Smith, why are we so ugly? But in the first one, she says, why were we born this way?
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that makes the biggest difference, because it almost feels like the 2002 era, like they changed it and they didn't get what the episode was about. Mm. It's not that they're ugly. It's that they're different. And that, like, that right there almost kind of sums up my entire feelings about the 2002 revival, is that I feel like these people who revived the Twilight Zone didn't really get the Twilight Zone. The episode that I watched was called The Pool Boy, which was Lou Diamond Phillips. He was a pool boy, but like,
ew.
He just kept getting shot.
Oh.
Like this guy would go up to him, point a gun and say, wake up. And then he would kept getting shot.
Okay.
And then he would wake up in his bed and then he'd go about his life. And then the guy would come again and he'd get shot. And then like it would all repeat. And slowly you start to realize that apparently he committed a murder. Him himself, the pool boy, committed this murder. And that he's like putting together the pieces and he's having post-traumatic stress. But at the end, he's just like a guinea pig for a prison because he was a murderer. He's in prison now. And they're making him relive and like come to terms with the murder in this really weird thing where they're simulating getting shot over and over and over, like over again. Yeah.
Oh.
But it felt more like an action movie. Mm-hmm. Just because of like the guy pointing the gun at you going, wake up, like every 5 seconds. And there didn't really seem to be a, like at the end, okay, so he's a prisoner coming to terms with his own murder. Like that didn't kind of work for me. Mm. Because it was also just like, oh, these people are just torturing him.
Yes.
At this point, you know, okay. And like doing this whole, like, what's the point? Almost like, I don't even get the technology. Like, you know, we can make prisoners relive like their crimes. Like, I don't know. For some reason that just didn't work. And it's like, I get that it seems like it's a Twilight Zone episode because why is this man getting shot over and over and over again? But like, it kind of lacks the connection. I'm not connecting to this story. Mm-hmm. And that's how I felt about a lot of the ones. But a one that I did think was good was the month they remade the Monsters.
Oh,
on Due on Maple Street.
Oh,
just because it dealt with American racism in it.
Okay, so before we get right into that, I actually, it's so funny, right? When we were watching, because I saw with Eddie the Monsters on Maple Street.
Yeah,
I saw that one, and I told Eddie, like, oh, this is great. This actually would work. Like, this could work if you change some things. This could be a very contemporary story still. Mm-hmm. I even said Muslims. I was like, if you could turn this to a Muslim family, it would be good. How do they fuck this up? I disagree. I respect the fact that they tried to take it and turn it into a contemporary story where the Muslims are the other, but there were some changes in it that just kind of like fell flat a little. For example, the mob went mob way too quickly.
Yes, there were a couple beats missing.
Way, way too quickly.
For sure.
I think how they came to like attack the family, the you never even got to see them really.
Yeah, that the was family, one
which was annoying.
True. Which was also though I kind of liked that because it's also like it made it like were they even there? It was all just like in their heads, and they like put this family as it's the idea of outcasts of. Muslims so, but then others
that, but then that leads to the implication because the twist ending for this one was the fact that it's not aliens who are doing this to us, it's our own US government doing this to us to see how we would react
in a terrorist
situation,
which was the one thing that I was kind of on the fence about because I was like, okay, so is this just showing that people are batshit crazy and scared about when it comes to terrorism, or that we all just hate each other? Like, what am I supposed to grab from right, this right.
Are we supposed to be suspicious of the government at all times?
Yeah.
Or are we supposed to be suspicious of each other, which is the original message, I think. Not the original message. Not that we're supposed to be suspicious
of each other. The original message was the humankind is frail and fragile and weak. But in this one, it's just like...
Paranoia.
The humans are doing paranoia. This to other humans. Yeah.
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 And I think also, again, the acting was so bad. Like the big fat guy who was supposed to be like the
chugging
bully.
A beer.
Oh my fucking god, it was awful.
But that's also like that was the last one that I saw, so at that point I was just used to it.
It was just it was just not good.
Yeah.
I did see one of the episodes on its original run when it was on.
Which one?
It was The Cradle of the Darkness, which stars Katherine Heigl. Ooh. Right? She plays a time traveler who goes back in time to kill baby Hitler. However, she can't come to kill a baby. So she ends up going to a priest to like confess, and she's like, I may have to kill a baby because he's going to kill however many Jews that, you know, Hitler does. And then like the priest is just like, well, you don't have that right. Only God can kill that baby.
Yeah.
So she decides, oh, fuck that. I'll kill myself too in the process. So she decides to kill herself with a baby. But one of the chambermaids from the house was following them and sees, you know, Katherine Heigl commit suicide with the baby. So she buys a gypsy baby. And passes it off as Hitler. And that's supposed to be the twist, right? That Hitler himself was a gypsy.
Yeah.
The man that he hates is what he was. But it wasn't. But even then, not that I was a fan of the Twilight Zone. When I had saw it, I was like, oh, this is kind of a cool thing. Now, watching all these Twilight Zone episodes, it's just like, but
What was the purpose?
What is the purpose? What is it telling me? Like, the Twilight Zone, it was great because the original run, they actually had messages.
Yes.
And you can commentary. Just see Rod Serling's, not just his commentary, but also his not his liberalism, what is it? He's a social justice warrior.
Yeah, he is. Was. Yeah.
And that word gets like a lot of flack nowadays, but I say fuck that. It's just like, why should we be ashamed for like asking for equal rights for other people?
No, for sure. Very much so interested in like this idea of imagination and our souls and our minds and how they work together. And it really feels like the 2001 was a bunch of guys who enjoyed the Twilight Zone on a surface level. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, let's revive it. Yeah, let's have a girl who wants to go back and kill Hitler's baby, but she doesn't. That's cool. Let's do a sequel to It's a Good Life, where the guy grows up and he has a daughter. That doesn't even make sense, first of all. Like, I don't know if we talked about this. We didn't. But the original run, there's an episode about a monster who can read people's minds and do terrible things to him. And that monster was a 6-year-old boy.
Oh, right. Yes. I remember, because Eddie actually made a good point. One of the newer episodes has kind of something similar to this.
In
a more practical reality.
In what revival?
In the most
recent. Oh, the 2019. Okay. Well, in the 2002 one, they decided to do a sequel to that. Mm-hmm. And they got the actor who played the 6-year-old boy grown up and he has a daughter. And I'm just like, but why? Like, I know it's a cool idea and on a surface level, it's cool. But like seeing it and then like, what am I getting out of it? The pool boy one, this one with the Hitler, like most of them, it left me empty.
They were more obsessed with like trying to get that twist.
Yeah. And that's the surface level of the Twilight Zone. And even like the intro, I was just like, oh, this is just like too preoccupied with seeming cool. Granted, I think Korn's a great band, but they did this like
rock intro, and only the end.
That's the ending of the song. Which is just like the 80s one, but I was just like so not into it. And I was just like, this is surface level Twilight Zone. This has none of the depth. This has none of the heart. This has none of the soul. So I did not like it.
Yeah, it's probably why it lasted only one season.
One season. So let's move on from that one.
Before we move on to that one, why do you think they cast Forrest Whitaker?
Is that, I don't know.
Weird casting?
Yeah. Like, he didn't really work for me.
He wasn't. He didn't. He. So many actors from 2002 that I can think of. No, I like Forrest Whitaker.
I think he's a great actor. Yeah. I just don't think he...
The Crying Game? Phenomenal.
Yeah.
But like, not for this.
Yeah, no.
I don't think of Forrest Whitaker with sci-fi. I just don't... The association's not with me.
I also think that I would have liked it when they did the 80s approach where let's just not show anyone, because I think that the idea of like Rod Serling appearing there smoking a cigarette in like his suit like works. But like now... doing that like any other time, I don't want to see them. I think I only wanted to see Rod Serling appear. I don't want to see anybody else appear. And every time somebody else appears, I'm just like snore. Ooh. And like, you're trying too hard to be Rod Serling, which can segue us into 2019.
That is the perfect segue for the 2019 reboot of The Twilight Zone by Jordan Peele.
You're traveling through another dimension, a dimension not only of sight and sound, but of mind. It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition. And it lies between the pit of one's fears and the summit of one's knowledge. You are now traveling through a dimension of imagination. You just crossed over into the Twilight Zone.
This one is headlined by Jordan Peele, from Key & Peele fame, and also because of the success of his directorial debut, Get Out. And when this has released, his second film came out, which was Us. And he has a lot, and those two films kind of play as extended Twilight Zone episodes. I also want to say that I made a film a couple years ago that I like wrote as like everything that I write is kind of like Twilight Zone things. Like the guy, I wrote a film about a kid who was raised by a television. That's a Twilight Zone episode. Mm-hmm. I wrote a film about a girl who goes missing at a party and it seems to be the supernatural thing. Like everything I've ever written, I've always written as a Twilight Zone episode, because I also think that's the best way. Like, I am a product of Rod Serling's theory, where it's like, if you want to do a commentary, you got to use a supernatural occurrence.
Oh, that's so funny. I actually, some of my movies, the endings were all about twists, but I wasn't inspired by Rod Serling. Mm-hmm. I just like twist endings.
True. Well, I feel like because of the time period too, like it could be argued that he kind of popularized that as like a storytelling motif, but not even like, I won't say twist endings.
Do you think M. Night Shyamalan was inspired?
Maybe, but that's another, I think he might be someone who enjoys it on a surface level, because I don't think it's twists. I think it's telling a commentary with a supernatural edge to it. That's what I think he does.
Oh no.
Sometimes they have twists.
Yeah. Rod Serling.
Yes.
But we are
M. Night Shyamalan.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Is a twist guy. Yes. Yeah. He enjoys Twilight Zone on a surface level.
As do I, to be quite honest. That's why I think all my short films I've had, those twist endings have been just about No, I'm gonna take that back. There's a reason for those twists. Mm. Usually comeuppance.
Yes. No. So, okay. Right. Oh, you like your justice desserts.
Yes, I do.
Okay, so 2019, this debuted only like a couple weeks ago, guys, but you can see it on CBS Access, All Access.
CBS All Access.
We did not get paid. Do a 7-day free trial.
They have so much money.
Yeah. You can do a 7-day free trial and watch all the episodes. As of when this episode will be released, there are only 5 episodes to watch.
5 episodes.
But soon enough, all 10, there's going to be 10 episodes to watch will be available. Okay, good.
So yes. Wait until those 10 episodes drop. Get your free 1 week of All Access.
And just binge it. Yeah, yeah, we're telling you have to do this. We're not suggesting it. We're telling them.
I don't know if I'm telling them to do it because I have some issues here.
But. I do have some issues too. But so I just want to say that this one is, again, similar to the original run and where there is a host clad in a suit who does an opening and ending narration.
Yes.
Just like from the 2002, the 80s one didn't have that. And the original, the theme song is pretty much the 5th season theme song from the Twilight Zone, the original run, just like done new.
With better effects.
It's obviously like the same exact thing. And I noticed that they took some of the narration of the first season, which is my favorite, and like shortened it down and incorporated like, you know, you're headed to a door and it unlocks the key with imagination and all this stuff. Like, so they incorporated both season 1 and season 5 narration of the theme song.
Yeah, which I think out of all the revivals, this one shows the most respect to the source material.
It does. That's true. That's a good way to put it. So how many did you see? You saw all 5?
I've seen all 5.
Nice. Did you like them enough to watch all 5?
That's a very loaded question because I have a podcast in which I feel like I have to.
Mm.
But at the same time, okay. All right. If I didn't have this podcast, would I be watching this Twilight Zone revival? Probably not.
Mm.
However, I would have watched the one free episode that was available on YouTube to give it a chance because I happen to like Jordan Peele's work.
I see.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
So I would have watched it for Jordan Peele, not for the Twilight Zone.
Okay.
Eddie, what about you?
I think I would have been interested to see how they would have for this time around done the Twilight Zone.
Mm. Okay, so you would have been interested for the Twilight Zone.
Especially in, you know, coming off of this Black Mirror.
Yes. Mm. And I think...
Because I'm thinking, we got Black Mirror. Do we need another Twilight Zone?
It's actually... And I think that's a very, very excellent point. We do have Black Mirror by Charlie Booker, which is our generation's
Twilight Zone.
Mm-hmm. Right? Except that they have a very... He has a very pointed view for what he wants to tell stories about, which is technology and its influences on us.
Yeah.
Twilight Zone... As you said earlier on, fantasy, there is no genre that you could put to it, right? He can go into supernatural realms and he can go into fantasy realms and he can go into science fiction realms. He was much more broad. And this 2019 Twilight Zone has that same broadness.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what about you? Would you have watched this if you didn't have a podcast?
Knowing me and also the fact that I'm such a fan of the original and Rod Serling, then I think I would have not.
You wouldn't have not?
No, okay. I would have just been like, leave it alone.
Despite the fact Jordan Peele, and have you seen any of Jordan Peele's work? Because this is one of those other works where you kind of, if you know his work,
yeah,
you can see how this all plays into it.
Yeah.
So what about, no?
No.
Not a Jordan, okay. Have you seen any of his movies?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I saw the first one, Get Out.
Get Out, okay.
Yeah. But I think that you're right that it does have a lot of respect for it, so maybe that would have drawn me to it. Did you pick up on all the little Easter eggs?
Yeah, there's lots of Easter eggs all over. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The Nick of Time one also really struck me. I was like, oh my gosh. I guess I saw 3. I saw Replay.
Which one? Oh, Replay? Replay? Okay.
We'll get into that.
Yeah, we'll get to specifics.
So the first episode, which is I think also the longest, is called The Comedian.
It's starring Kumail Nanjiani. Sorry guys if we mispronounce that. I'm trying.
He's a struggling comedian who's not very funny or who wants to joke about serious things but realizes that in order to become famous, you have to sacrifice some shit.
Yeah, don't call him that funny. I don't think he was not funny.
Well, in terms of the episode, I'm not giving my opinion. I'm giving the opinion of the audience in the episode.
Listen to his actual comedy?
Yeah, they were fine.
Yeah, I thought they were. I thought it was like, this is, I would laugh at this.
Yeah.
He was trying. All right. He was trying to use comedy to change the world.
Yes.
That's what he wanted to do.
Okay, but commentary about the world.
Yes.
Yes. But nobody wants commentary.
Interesting, because that's what Rod Serling was using
sci-fi. Yes. And almost was like saying that like that. People don't want it. It was interesting because I'm just like, it's kind of almost, it was odd because is it a commentary about people and what people want, or is it a commentary about fame? Because I first was reading it like, you have to sacrifice some shit and sacrifice the ones you love for fame. That's how I was reading it. I was like, oh, this is interesting. This is a story about sacrifice.
Why not both?
But then it became that. And then like when you watch it on CBS All Access and you're like, all people want to know are like jokes about their dumb dog. And then it cuts to a commercial about like, there's a lobster in our hot tub. And it's like, whoa, this is like getting really meta almost. Mm-hmm. Like this show is like giving me some commentary about what people want or what we're force fed and what we don't want in commentary. And then I see this commercial. It was just like kind of a, for me, it was kind of a mind fuck because I'm like, this is the our present day reality.
I think it's all a different commercial, but point taken.
But yeah, like you see a commercial and it's just absolute absurdity. And people like us, the people who made the commercial are think that you're dumb yeah. and just want you like want to show you something that's really stupid, like a lobster in a hot tub.
Mm-hmm. They're trying to sell you Geico insurance, by the way. What? It's for Geico.
Oh, yeah, it is for. Oh, so you do know that commercial. Yeah,
I know the commercial. I've seen it.
No, it's so yeah, but yeah.
I don't watch commercials, so I don't know.
You don't watch commercials? I love commercials. Oh, commercials are like the poetry of our of like film.
That's so sweet.
Think about it. Yeah, because you know,
like maybe they're the haikus.
Film are like your novels. TV shows are like, I guess, your anthologies. And then like the commercial, good commercials, they're fucking. They can tell a 30-second story if they could do it very effectively. Uh-huh. They're poetry.
I think we should call them haikus. Because you're limited with how much you can tell in a haiku. Because in sure. poetry,
a haiku is a poem, though.
It is a form of poem.
Yeah.
And it's a limited poem.
Because there's different types of commercials. There's some minute long commercials. So yes. I'm just saying, in general.
So, in general.
That's my theory on like commercial guys. I'm patenting that.
But I thought that the telling of it, like, it almost was a little too, like, when he was funny, he wasn't even funny.
Oh, disagree.
Like when he was shitting on people and, you know, like sacrificing them.
When he became,
yeah. Like he would just say one thing and people would start laughing. And then I'm like, oh, okay. So it's just about the sacrifice itself because this isn't funny.
Well, I agree with you. I think it was. So Tracy Jordan Morgan?
Tracy Morgan. Tracy Jordan, you just saw him in person.
No, I know. I did see him in
person. You'd be like, I love you, Tracy Jordan.
No, I screamed, bring 30 Rock back.
Oh, okay.
As a, you know, as a nod to last week's episode. Of our show. No, Tracy Morgan. He was he the devil? The closing shot where he's talking to the black girl.
Mm-hmm.
What's it called? As we're panning out, like he's not there. He's just talking to nothing.
Oh.
Yeah, so I thought he was like I interpreted him as the devil. Like you're making a deal with the devil. Like you have to give yourself. It doesn't matter what you're giving.
True, because it's about sacrifice.
If you're just
yeah.
sacrificing that part of you, then you will get the reaction that you want and start becoming famous.
Yeah.
So yeah, so that's how I read that as.
I thought it was an interesting commentary. I thought it was a bit long.
Oh, yeah, we could say
definitely
that,
you know? Very long. And although I knew I was like, okay, at the end he has to sacrifice himself, you know. Like I liked that at the end, I guess everything was back to normal and then he was just eliminated. Everyone else he eliminated is back.
It was a happy ending.
Kind of. It was a fitting ending.
Okay.
Like I said, for the original Twilight Zone, when it ends like with a quote unquote happy ending, it's usually because it's fitting.
Okay.
Like nothing becomes like, ooh, like, and if it leaves you unperturbed, it's because it was fitting.
I genuinely thought that I was expecting that. I guess there wasn't a twist ending on this episode, right?
No.
No, right? So I thought there was going to be a twist ending. Mm-hmm. I thought when the mic dropped, I thought he was doing a mic drop and it was going to be his girlfriend. His ex-girlfriend at that time who disappeared.
That's what I thought too.
He decided to go for the full fame. But no, he sacrificed himself.
Well, what I really was hoping for was that when he tried to sacrifice himself, he realized he couldn't. And then he had to live the rest of his life with what he did. But it didn't go in
that way. Okay, that would have been another fitting
That's
ending.
What I wanted.
Yeah,
but
I can see that.
But it was interesting. It was shot very nice.
Oh, gorgeously shot. Yeah. I think... Okay, yeah. That's great. I think we have some agreements there that I want to talk about a little bit.
Okay.
About the...
About this episode or in general?
In general. Like, I think this is something that the length is something that I think keeps coming up a lot for these episodes that I have seen from the Twilight Zone.
So because we're in this new era now where we can make things for being seen only online, you know, length isn't really an issue. We can make something a half hour. We can make it an hour. You know, people can watch them. It's not like it's the 8 p.m. slot and commercials have this, this mm-hmm. and that. So they have the freedom to, but I think that's kind of a bad thing because they should limit themselves just like they did in the original run where they said, you know, we perfected the half hour thing because that's how what we knew how we could tell our story. And that when they were forced to do the hour long episodes, they were like, you're fucking with us. And yeah, you're Rod jeopardizing Shirley, our show.
With those 30 minute episodes, you know, 25, I guess.
25, right? Yeah.
Brilliant story. Like, brilliant, brilliant screenwriter. Mm-hmm. Like, he's able to get in and out quickly and yep. still deliver those points.
Yes.
You didn't need an hour on the comedian. You didn't need the 50 minutes on the next episode. You don't need the length that you could give all these other episodes.
I would even applaud them if they did like 30, 35 minutes. Like really try and make it tight,
I could have trimmed these episodes.
Definitely.
Sure. Because even let's talk about the comedian since that's what we're talking about right now. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that's probably the one that people have seen the most since it was available for free for a while. That episode... the first half of it, it's just the same stuff happening again and again. Like him realizing it's just like, oh, I do this joke, and then like they disappear.
Yeah.
And they just like, I guess they just like stretch that out.
They do. And they're almost too preoccupied with like hitting the beats of the 8-story arc. Like, you know, the climax and every resolution and all this stuff mm-hmm. that it's just like, okay. Like you don't have to hit every single beat.
Yeah, yeah. Agreed.
So cut it down. But so the very next episode is their remake of the original Nightmare at 35,000 Feet.
Yes.
It's when, and this time they change it up a little bit.
They change it up in good ways.
Yes. I think. Except for the ending. So.
Oh, well, that goes to the whole.
So argument. Unnecessary. I just thought the ending was not.
So terrible.
So this is a spoiler ahead for episode.
Yeah, for this entire episode. Come on.
But yeah, so go on. Give us a synopsis of what's going
on. So in the original Nightmare at 35,000 Feet, William Shatner was just released from a mental asylum.
Yes.
And he sees a monster on the wing of his plane and he's freaking out and he wants everybody else to see it, but nobody else can see it. Quote unquote monster. It's this weird guy in a gorilla suit.
It's just the dumbest thing. That was like, honestly, I got the list that you gave me, that was the dumbest episode. My least favorite one.
Well, it's so great because at the end of it, like it's this great idea where like, okay, he's taken away again. It's like, you're crazy. But then like he sees the monster again. Is it, am I really crazy or do I see the world for what it is? And it addresses this idea of what is it to be crazy, you know,
okay.
And perception, perspective. Soon. For our news.
Okay.
That's why it works so well, because to me, it's not about like whether or not there was a monster on the wing of the plane. It's about perception and right. what it is to be crazy. But okay. In this new episode of Nightmare at 35,000 Feet, there's a man who's listening to a podcast that is pretty much saying this airline goes missing. So he's like listening to a future podcast about the plane that he's on. Mm-hmm. So it right there, it's juggling this whole thing about, okay, like. This it no longer is a man who is crazy who sees a monster on the wing of the planes. It's just simply a man who has this device that looks into the future.
Yes.
And so what they do in this story is they take out that element of crazy and perception. They eliminate that. And then what they mainly make it about is like how it almost becomes a time travel story and where this man inadvertently becomes the reason why this podcast was created and the airline goes down. And then at the end, they all survive and then they all... kill him because he's the reason the airline goes down. And I'm just like, did they really need to do that? So that really actually pissed me off. Although, did you see the Easter egg of the monster?
Yeah, little
doll. Washed up on the beach.
Yeah, so
cute. Right? I was like, I want that doll. But yeah, I really actually did not like that. And then I think Jordan Peele himself co-wrote that one. And I was like, really? You thought that was a good ending? Like, eh.
What did you think of the actual device? Like, instead of a gremlin being visible, it's something that's in his head.
Yeah, like I said, it just becomes a story about time travel and how you try to avoid a certain future, but actually you're destined to make that future happen.
Manifest destiny. Yeah. That was the thing. I don't know if that was what the episode itself was about, though. That was just a device?
I don't think it had anything to do about crazy and perception when it came to that, though.
No, I think it was... I think the story was actually more about manifest destiny.
Yes.
Than it was about the actual device. So it wasn't about the time travel thing. I think it was actually about the fact that like sometimes when we're trying to prevent something from happening, we just end up making it happen.
Yeah.
Right. Almost similar to like the lady avoiding death. Right.
Yes.
She herself could not live life because she was so focused on trying to avoid death. In this case, he was so focused on trying to save this plane that it was him who ends up creating that downfall.
Yeah.
And I think the episode itself could have ended with that shot of like, you know, him
the plane going under. Shit,
I this is all my fault. Could have ended there. Instead, we get that like tie up at the end where, you know, they're all on the island and they kill him.
Yeah.
And
then he finds his iPhone, listens to the podcast, and the podcast tells him, by the way, you're about to die.
Yes.
Because everybody else survives, but they kill you.
Yeah, so that was dumb.
That was unnecessary.
And I could have cut, again, there was just some things that you could cut. You could have made that episode easily a half hour, and it would have had, it would have been
fine.
The
same impact. Yeah.
It would have been good.
For sure.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem with some of these episodes. I think the next one, Rewind, also suffers from that a little, where it's just a little too long. Great story about, so the story Rewind, for those who don't know, it's about a young black woman. Mm-hmm. Who's taking her son to college. Mm-hmm. And she discovers that her video camera can rewind time. So they get pulled over by a racist cop who is intent on harassing them. So no matter what she does, he's always there to harass them in one way or another. It's very Black Lives Matter. It's very, very, it's not hiding at all what this message is about.
Yeah.
Where Rod Sterling's story is usually were a little more coded. This one was just blatant in front of you. I like the story, mm-hmm. despite how obvious what it was about.
I actually didn't finish it. How did it end?
It ends, so she goes to her brother,
mm-hmm.
and her brother helps her and her son go underground. Oh my God, I just realized the Underground Railroad.
Was her name Harriet? No, sorry.
So they go underground to, was her name Harriet? It was with
What's
an
her
H.
name?
It was with an H.
Let me look it up really quick while you continue.
Oh, okay. No, I'm sorry. Nina Harrison.
Oh, Harrison. Okay, there you go.
Mrs. Harrison. Right. Ms. Harrison.
Oh.
Okay, so she ends up... So her brother helps her go underground to get to the college through these, like, you know, system of tunnels and stuff. And then when they get out of it, the cop is there waiting for them. And, you know, he's about to shoot them because they're not listening to him. But then mm-hmm. there's all these black students and black parents there because it's a historically black college.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all with their phones out and stuff. And she's just like, you know what? We're not afraid of you. But the ending, she's kind of afraid because she still lives her life like recording things just in case she has to rewind something. And there's an ambiguous ending where he goes out and the next thing you know is just like there's police lights. So it's implied like they can't escape the racism that we're living in.
Oh,
and she never let go of that fear, that, you know, that kind of that message that that episode itself had, which is just like, we're not afraid of you. She lost it because, like,
she did it. I disagree. We had this argument yesterday.
We did have this argument.
And I disagree wholeheartedly because it's too different. She is standing up for what's right, for equality. But the fear that she has is the fear of losing her child.
Mm.
Yeah.
Because she's seen all the versions that took place. So she's witnessed. She's experienced the loss, and now that she's gripping to the surety, to be sure, the security blanket is the camcorder, because if anything does happen, she could rewind time and save him. Mm. So that's why it's years later, he has his own kid, and she's still pointing this camera at her son, because she's a mom, because she loves, and because is that fear of, like, one day... someone may take him away from me.
Aww.
But isn't that fear that she is living with?
It is
with?
Fear, but
it's own, but like it's own.
Her incredible speech at the end, or when she stands up against that cop, is not negated. You know, the fear of loss, the fear of losing someone you care about. I think that's always going to be inside of her.
Hmm.
I think that's something to say. You know, the possibility, when we love, there's always a possibility of loss.
Yeah. Mm.
You know, there's always that fear.
Yeah. And I actually do respect this show where, like, that's a good Twilight Zone episode. You can interpret it however you want.
Yeah.
Right? A good Twilight Zone episode. So that's where I think this remake sometimes is hit or miss.
Okay.
Sometimes they're a little bit too obvious what they're about. Mm. They're kind of telling you.
Mm-hmm.
And the original Twilight Zone, like, you can... The endings, they're not as... There's sometimes ambiguity there. Enough ambiguity for you to have discussions.
All of them. There are some
flawed
ones.
All of
there
them.
Are a lot of them. But like,
I think some of the better ones.
As a series,
ones,
it's very strong.
Right.
Yeah.
And then there's two more episodes. I don't think you haven't caught up.
No, I haven't.
So I could just give you some rundowns. One of them is about an Inuit cop in like a white town and dealing with her own. There's a alien invasion on that one.
Ooh.
Starring Steven Yeun.
Mm-hmm.
And the final episode that I saw was starring John Cho. He's a political advisor who, after losing, it looked like it was a Trump figure.
Yeah.
Trump loses his reelection, that Trump figure. And now John Cho's out of a job and kind of humiliated as a result. So what happens is there's this like 11-year-old kid doing YouTube videos how he wants to run for president. So John Cho decides to like make him. He becomes his campaign advisor and helps him run for president. He ends up winning. And this kid ends up becoming a tyrant. All right? And
failed criticism of our president.
That episode kind of like reflects about the little boy with all that power.
Yes, it's a great life, yeah.
Given to him, and now he's just
doing whatever he wants.
Wow,
it was very thinly, 100% thinly veiled criticism of our president, because I think some of the kids' like dialogue is ripped out of like headlines.
Oh my god!
Which the joke there is just like, oh, our president is a toddler.
Yeah,
he is. Oh, sorry, guys, I'm not good. There's no denying that either side of the party. But yeah, and that's its own thing. But I don't know. What do you think so far of the episodes that you've seen? What do you think of the show?
If it keeps going in the direction of the ones that I've seen, and I'll give it a shot, like I'll keep watching, but I think that it's going to unfortunately fall a little flat, even though it has the guise of being, it's more respectful of the original and it's going more in the traditional route. I think it's not doing it well enough to make me want to see more.
Hmm.
I haven't seen that much Black Mirror, but I do think that like in this day and age, like there's other outlets for us to tell things that are kind of like Twilight Zone stories, that like now something that is labeled the Twilight Zone isn't as good as the things that are inspired by it.
Yes.
And I'd rather see the things that are inspired by it instead of something that calls itself the Twilight Zone, because then it's going to try a little too hard to be something that it's kind of not.
Yeah.
And it won't ever be.
I 100% agree with you. The Black Mirror, for what it, and you know, they've had their lows and highs, mm-hmm. but Black Mirror, like it has kind of a thesis and it's out to prove that thesis with the stories. Twilight Zone, even this one, what I'm noticing though more and more is like these episodes so far, 4 out of the 5 of them, the main character has been a person of color. The first episode was Indian guy, second episode was a white guy. But the third episode was the black woman. Fourth is, what was he?
You said Inuit.
She was Inuit.
And then the fifth one I saw, there was an Asian man. Was
John Cho.
Okay,
there that's we John go. Cho. Yeah, he is Asian. These are your main characters. So it's interesting because Rod Serling's, he was all about equal rights. Mm-hmm. He was a social justice warrior. However, a lot of his casting
was white.
And it's a part of the times.
Yeah, exactly.
No, but he was still telling stories for these people.
Mm-hmm.
The other, the oppressed. He mm-hmm. was telling those stories. The 2002 and the 90s and the 80s revival, the ones that I saw and the ones that you could pick from, white cast.
Yeah.
All right. It's Jordan Peele and this story and these that are telling stories of people of color, and you know, they're by a person of color, at least.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think in its portrayal of representation mm-hmm. is kind of what is making this show stand out.
Yeah, that's a nice mm-hmm. added thing to it. What do you think about Jordan Peele as the host?
I don't know if he has the same, like, it's so, I used to watch Jordan Peele and Key and Peele.
So it's hard for me to take it.
Especially, like, one of my favorite skits with Jordan Peele's one where he's dressed as a woman. Right.
Okay.
So it's just hard every time I see him, because there's a great poster too where like he gives great face, he's looking back and like surprised, and he's in drag.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter what, every time I see Jordan Peele, this is what I think of. Despite the fact of how much I loved Us and mm-hmm. Get Out.
Yeah, but he wasn't in that. Like all of a sudden, Jordan Peele himself appears.
True. Yes. Yes. You're right. Because when I see Jordan Peele, I think of Key and Peele.
Yeah, me too. So it's like, and I'm like, oh, and you're in a suit and you're like really doing a good Rod Serling.
Despite the fact of how he has proven himself that he can tell all types of stories.
Yes.
It's so still hard for me to like escape that.
Yeah, it is what it is.
Especially when he's married to Chelsea Chelsea Pereri.
Okay.
She's a comedian, right? So mm-hmm. they're just like, when I think of Jordan Peele, I automatically go to comedy. And it's still, it's hard whenever you're watching his work, and like, his work usually has like some elements of comedy.
Yeah.
That end up feeling like, oh wait, is this supposed to be funny or is this supposed to be serious and stuff?
Yeah.
And that confusion sometimes is just there. And I think what he's been able to do with The Twilight Zone, though, it's been able to like just been kind of serious in tone. Mm-hmm. There hasn't been that kind of weird shift in tone, despite the fact of how absurd it is to have an 11-year-old president. The plot of Cory in the House.
We're living in the Twilight Zone, apparently. I guess
we
are.
Yes, that's true. We do have a 11-minded-year-old president.
Yeah, I mean, like we said in the Arrested Development episode, we feel like we're living in a parody of America. Mm-hmm. No, we're just living in the Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
So closing narration of Rod Serling, please be inserted here.
My question for you, Nicole, though, okay. is as someone who has watched this series, and I'm going to ask this to you, Eddie, too. Do you think we need this Jordan Peele revival?
I kind of think I already answered that, and I don't think we do.
You don't think we do?
No. Okay. Like I said, I'd rather see the inspirations now for the Twilight Zone instead of something calling itself the Twilight Zone.
All right. What about you?
I'm actually going to stick with this and see what else comes from it. Because I just love shows like this.
Yeah.
So too, to add to, you know, like Weird City, Outer Limits, it's like all the other kind of shows. I would like to see how, what direction this is going to go.
Okay. And you? I think you cannot compete with the original one. The original one is so good. It's one of those few things that I could say. It's so funny, right? When we were watching the original run for the Twilight Zone and they're talking about science and stuff, I was just like, whoa. They knew this stuff in the 1950s and 60s?
Yeah.
I thought they believed in like witchcraft and stoning.
Oh my God.
He thinks like the 30s were like dinosaur ages.
It's just like. It's like science was that advanced back then. They had an idea of like space travel because we hadn't landed on the moon yet.
We were flying in the 20s.
But we weren't. Yeah, we were flying, but like we weren't. We didn't reach the moon
yet. We were orbiting the moon. Okay, continue.
I'm just saying. I was flabbergasted. However, my own prejudices aside of what I think the past is, the show was so ahead of its time, and it's still so fucking good.
Yep.
It just is a good show. I don't know if we need a new The Twilight Zone. They could have rebranded the show anything else,
yeah.
and it'd be good, because I think it's the people of color and the representation that's in this show that makes this show stand out.
I think so.
But for the Twilight Zone itself, like that canon that is 3 revivals and 1 series,
mm-hmm.
I think it's good to have these new stories, these new people of color front and center.
Okay.
For this America.
So let's rank them from worst to best. Okay. You go first.
I'm going to go with the original run. Obviously, it's the best.
Wait, okay. So you're doing
best to worst. Original run.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go with the 2019. Then the 1980 something. And then finally the 2002 version.
Mine's very similar, except all the way at the bottom would be the 2002 one, terrible.
Uh-huh.
Then it would be the new one, the 2019. Oh. And then it would be the 80s. And then it's going to be, of course, the original run, which is absolutely stellar, amazing television.
Yeah. I mean, there's no competition.
There's no. Like, this is truly one of the best TV shows that ever lived. If you've never seen it, and our hour and a half podcast episode has not convinced you to listen to it, then I guess we can't convince anyone of anything because The Twilight Zone is so good. She convinced you itself alone.
I was going to ask you, who would you compare, if you compare Rod Serling with Jordan Peele for the delivery of the opening and closing?
There's no comparison.
No, there's not.
There's really no comparison. And we're not even considering Forrest Whitaker, sorry.
Oh my God, Forrest Whitaker. Already forgot about you.
I prefer Charles Aidman because I don't see him. I just hear him and he's trying really hard to do a Rod Serling.
Yeah.
But yeah, so do you like The Twilight Zone? Tell us what you think about any of these revivals at our Gmail. What is our Gmail?
Our Gmail is remakesrebootsrevivals@gmail.com.
And on our Instagram at remakesrebootsrevivals.
And you can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/remakesrebootsrevivals.
Yeah.
If you search for remakes, reboots, and revivals, you'll find us.
Yeah, it's, yeah.
And also be sure to comment and like us and rate us on your podcasting apps. It helps us, you know, we'll be able to know what you guys like, what you guys don't like.
Mm-hmm.
So that way we can make better episodes for you guys.
It helps you guys too, and you did your good deed for the day.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, get that good Samaritan vibe going to start off your day.
Yep.
Yeah. So thank you, Eddie Z.
You're welcome.
So I wish we could have a Rod Serling closing narration for this episode, but I guess not.
I can't think of one.
Yeah, me neither.
All right.
All right. Well, until next time, stay unoriginal.